for grace to trust Him more. Now, we're going to be back in Genesis tonight. I think we're in Genesis 38, I believe, 38, 39. I'll know it when I see it. Yeah, 38. That's where we're at. I knew somebody would tell me where I was at. Sometimes I get confused. It says here in the Bible, we have Judah went down from his brethren. In other words, after they sold Joseph, and he's on his way to Egypt right now, probably already in Egypt, they got back to the house, they consoled Jacob, and they tried to make him feel better and to do all this. But you know, when you got that big of a secret going on and you got 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 brothers that's involved in this secret, pretty soon that trust issue gets carried on and says, looks like possibly that Judah says, I ain't getting along with them. It's time for me to go a little bit farther down the road because we're liable to say something and we're going to say it at the wrong time, at the wrong place, and guess who's going to hear it? So best for me to move on down the road. So it says, and it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren, and he turned to a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hiram, which turned out to be his friend. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. That's the Canaanite's name. It doesn't say who the wife's name was. And he took her, and he went in unto her. So it says he was separated from his brothers. He separated from his family. He hooks up with this guy who's an Adullamite, who is Hiram. And the Jews actually think this Hiram is the same Hiram who was the king during David and Solomon's time, which made him, 1,000-something years old, nearly about. So I don't think that was him. So they got that one a little bit stretched on age there. But anyways, this Hiram guy was Judah's friend or companion or somebody he took great confidence in. And while he's living in that land over there where the Adullamites are, he says he sees this Canaanite girl. Now, we understand that it was not really a good thing for him to marry a Canaanite girl, but for some reason, in all the providence of God, Judah marries a Canaanite. He's one of the first ones that steps out of bounds here. Now, Judah's supposed to be in the bloodline of Jesus Christ. So somewhere in the bloodline of Jesus Christ, we got Canaanites. So we got a mixture of the Hebrews and the Canaanites. And the Canaanites were the people who were pushed out of the land. So it says, the Canaanite, whose name was Shua, and he took her and he went into her. And that doesn't mean he took her by force. He talked to her father, Shua, and they made arrangements. And after they made arrangements, he married her and then he cohabitated with her. And then it says, and she conceived and bare a son, and his name was Ur. Ur, in my searching, is equal to the word watchman, or possibly could be the word childless. And we understand as we read the rest of this chapter, we're going to find out that he goes and dies childless because of what he did. So Ur means childless or without children. And so Ur was the first son of Judah. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she named his name Onan. Onan is basically the same name as Beoni, or like the same name as Benjamin was when he was first born, a child of grief or sorrow. So the second child was called grief or sorrow. And then it says, and she again conceived. So it looks like Judah was doing what he was commanded to do, go out and get married and make children. So he was doing the right thing. And she conceived again and bare a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Jizib, when she bare him. And Shelah means tranquil, quiet, or peaceable, or possibly that he forgot or forgets about his wife. In other words, he finally says, I'm not going to deal with you right now. I'm just going to put you over to the side. So this last son is tranquil or quiet or peaceable. And so as they're growing up and the children are getting older, so we figure we've got about 19 years maybe goes by. And it says, and Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, whose name was Tamar. Now there's another Tamar who was the daughter of David, but this Tamar was the daughter of a Canaanite, if I'm not mistaken here. We'll find out in a minute. And she took the firstborn, was Tamar, and Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. And the commentators seem to think that his wickedness was that he tried to save the beauty of his wife, so instead of using her naturally or whatever, that she might get pregnant and stretch marks and stuff like that, he was using her in an unnatural way, and so therefore, being it was an unnatural thing he was doing, God immediately killed him. And so it says he was very wicked in the sight of the Lord. Now, there's nothing that says exactly what his sin actually was, so that's just a conjured up thought of what he might have done. But usually when God has something that's going on very unnatural or whatever, he puts a stop to it pretty quick. So married Tamar, and he was very, very wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him or killed him. So that ended that marriage pretty quick. Then it says here, and Judah said unto Onan, go in unto thy brother's wife and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. Which we know there's a law about that. In fact, let's check out Deuteronomy chapter 25 real quick. I normally don't change channels, but Deuteronomy chapter 25. Because the first husband is dead, and they went childless. In chapter 25 and verses 6 it says, and it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall, and it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, and his name be not put out of Israel. In other words, if your brother's wife didn't have a child when you died, the next in line goes in and has a child by her, and that child is named or put in the lineage or of the father, the first brother. So it says here, and if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate and unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel, he will not perform the duty of her husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders, loose his shoe from off his foot, and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. So we see here back in Genesis here that Onan didn't want to raise up seed to his brother, because that means my firstborn son, in his mind, would actually be Ur's son, would actually be Ur's heritage. So whatever firstborn child I get, all of his inheritance goes to Ur's side of the family. So in selfishness and stuff like that, he says, I'm not going to do that. So here's what he says, and he, what chapter am I? I'm in the wrong chapter. And in Genesis, back in Genesis, it says, and Onan, when he knew that the seed should not be his, in other words, he knew that if he conceived a child with her, or she conceived a child by him, it would belong to her brother. It came to pass when he went in unto her brother's wife, that he spilled it on the ground, lest he should give seed to his brother. In other words, he refused to do the part of the brother for the brother. And so he spilled it on the ground. And then it says, and the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him. Now, I understand that God tells us to get married, or especially back in that time, you're supposed to get married and replenish the earth. And of course, God's in charge of when children come and when children don't come. But on the other hand, if you refuse to try to have children or refuse to try to do it the way it's supposed to be, then I know we can't squash what God has planned, but in man's eyes, it's like you're trying to, I'll have kids when I get good and ready to have kids or whatever. And that's what we do nowadays when we have birth control and stuff like that. And I understand the concept of those things. But technically, in that day and time, when birth control wasn't in, you were supposed to have kids and have families and replenish the earth and have big families so you could run the farms and everything else. But this man says, I'm not going to do that. And God says, okay, I'll kill you too. So because he refused to raise up seed for his brother, God took him out also. And it says, and the thing displeased the Lord, and he slew him also. And then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow at thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also, as his brother did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So he says, look, please, go to your dad's house. Go stay with your family. Shelah's still a couple of years too young now to get married, or at least I feel like he is. Er died pretty early. Onan died pretty early. Let's give Shelah at least a fighting chance. Let's let him get good and grown. And when he's good and grown, then I'll bring him to you, and y'all can be married and raise up children. And she says, okie dokie. And goes to her dad's house. Now, she realized this could take a year or so, or two or three years. He's probably maybe a year or two, maybe 2 years, 3 years behind, possibly. So she said, well, I can wait for 2 or 3 years. I won't be so old that I still can't have children or whatever. So she goes to her father's house. She plays the widow, or dresses like a widow and mourns for her husbands for that period of time. Judah's thinking, maybe, possibly, look, if I put her off, I keep Shelah alive. There might be something about this girl that just, every boy that goes near her just drops dead. I'm going to save one son. You know, that may be on his mind too. I got one son left. I want him to live as long as he can. If he goes and marries her, it's over. His life's out. So Judah got Tamar, his daughter-in-law, to remain a widow at his father's house, at her father's house, till Shelah, her son, was grown, and he said, lest peradventure he die, as his brethren did. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. And in the process of time, that means the time of what she figured was enough time that he should have been grown, enough time that he should have been well able to come play the part of the husband, he should be able to come take the duty over. In the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. Now here we go. We got a man, and it could be for the fact that he's withholding his son, possibly, maybe. I mean, we have no direct cause for that. But his, Judah, he's done lost two sons, and now he's got a wife that's died, and I'm sure he loved her very, very much. And now all that's left is him and Shelah. And so in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted. In other words, it might have been 6 months, it might have been a year, whatever it took for him to get over mourning for his wife. He was comforted. Lost my place. And went up to the shearers, or sheep shearers, at Timnath, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. So after he got over mourning for his wife, he says, you know what, Hira, we're going to go up here and we're just shearing the sheep, and we're going to check on how the guys are doing, and we're just going to barbecue and hang out and maybe have a sacrifice or what have you, and we're just going to check out how all things are going. He says, Hira, why don't you come with me on up there? And he said, and the Adullamite went up with him, and it was told. Like I told you, you can't never do nothing in secret. Every time we turn around, somebody's telling somebody something in this book. Somebody's always going to tell on you. It says, and it was told Tamar, saying, Behold, thy father-in-law goeth up to Timnath to shear his sheep. Wait a minute. I've been sitting here for a couple of years playing the widow. His wife is dead. He's just got over. Now, men are men. We know that. And there comes a time when men are just men. And so he's had time to mourn. He's had time to get over losing his wife. And Tamar's sitting there saying, he's up there shearing sheep. He's up there partying. He's going to hang around with the guys for a while. This is my opportunity to make a move, to do something. And he says, and she put her widow's garments off from her head, from her, and she covered her with a veil. Now, we've run into veils a couple, three times in this book. And it always seems like that for modesty, we remember that Rebecca put on one, or was it Rebecca put on one when she met Isaac. But this lady puts on a veil and puts on a head covering and covers herself and disguises herself. And it says that she put on, covers herself with a veil and wraps herself and sat at one of the at the open place, which is by the way of Timnath, and she saw that Shelah was grown and she was not given to him. So she says, because Judah won't give me Shelah, I'm going to go out there and see if Judah passes by. I'm going to go out there like a fisherman with my lure. I'm going to go out there and sit by the wayside. I'm going to dress like a harlot. I won't call him. I won't tease him. But I'm going to be just close enough to the road that if he just happens to glance just right, we're going to find out what he's made out of. It says here that she put her widow's garments off from her covering, and her covering of a veil, and she wrapped herself and sat in the open place, which was by the way of Timnath, and for she saw that Shelah was grown. There's no doubt he's old enough. There's no doubt he's big enough. There's no doubt he should have done been married to her. And if that had been the case, she wouldn't be on the side of the road right now. So in one sense, we got two sins going on. Or we're fixing that two sins going on. She should have stayed at the house. On the other hand, Judah should have had her married by now. Judah has lied to her. Judah, maybe because he's trying to save his son, take care of his son, whatever, he should have done had her married to her. But yet, he's still at the house, healthy, wealthy, and wise. It says, Judah must have been finally over his mourning, because when Judah saw her, boy, I bet the devil was walking all over this. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot because she had covered her face. He thought her to be a harlot because she had covered her face. I like the book of First Mentions. That's why I got this right there. Some of the first times we see about veils and coverings and stuff like that. But he thought. Now, every harlot, from what I've discovered in this dust, some harlots did cover, some harlots did not cover, depending on what they were, their temple harlots or street harlots or what have you. But undoubtedly, he thought she was one of the standoffish street girls, because the temple girls didn't mind you seeing who they were, because you were worshiping Venus or Mars or one of those guys. But here, she stands off to the side. She's not out there actually trying, but she's there advertising silently. And he says, and he saw her, and he thought her to be a harlot, because she had covered her face. And he told unto her, and he turned unto her. Oh man, he saw her. He says, man, I've been without my wife for a couple, 3 months, or 6 months, or whatever it may be. It might have been a year, I don't know. But he says, ain't going to hurt just for a little while. And he turned unto her. He says, and he turned unto her by the way and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come into thee. So he makes the first move. He makes the first offer. He says, hey, How about letting me come into you? How about letting me have some time with you? How about us going off to the room somewhere?" And she said, "For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law." In other words, the way she lowered her voice or raised her voice or squeaked when she talked or whatever she did, she was covered up enough and she was had enough stuff on that when he talked to her, she made just enough sounds that he didn't know who she was. Because I'm pretty sure if she'd talked in her regular voice, he'd have caught it right then and there. But undoubtedly, he was so beside himself that when she spoke to him and told him what the deal was and what the rules was going to be and how things were going to go, all he had on his mind was what guys have on their minds. And he turned into her and said, "Go, I pray thee, and let me come into thee." For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, "What wilt thou give me?" Now understand that no matter if you give something or you don't give something, this occupation is wrong. This is not the thing that we're supposed to go do. But she said, "What will you give me? For thou mayest come into me." And he said, "I will send thee a kid from the flock." I don't know what a kid's worth, but that's what the price was. One kid from the flock. And I'm sure he had some very nice kids, or some very nice sheep, well bred, and all that stuff. And he says, "I will send thee a kid from the flock." And she said, "Wait a minute. The flock's way over yonder. Me and you are right here. Wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? Will you sort of give me some kind of token or whatever? I understand, I believe you're going to give me a sheep. But you could walk right out of this building right now and give me nothing. So, how about a little pledge, a little something to go by?" And her mindset might also have been, if this backfires, I've got his equipment. I've got his ring. I've got his bracelet. I've got his staff. So he says here, "What wilt thou give me for a pledge till thou send it?" And he says, "What pledge shall I give thee?" And she said, "Thy signet." Now you understand, when she had his signet ring, she had his tribe. She had all of his authority. She had all of his power. She was in charge of his thing because she could have rubber stamped anything she wanted to. He gave her a lot at that point. He says, "How about thy, I'll give you my signet and thy bracelet." Now, we're not sure if that was a real bracelet because the commentators kind of argue over whether he had a bracelet on or not, or it was a handkerchief or some other kind of gizmo. But the Bible says it was a bracelet, so I'm going to go with a bracelet. And he gave her his bracelet and the staff that was in his hand. Now, we don't know if it was just a straight staff or a crook staff or whatever, but it was probably a very nice staff. I figure it's probably one of them that's all decorated up and you got your little initials in it and little soldiers or whatever drawed all over it and carved all in. I've seen some of them sticks down at the truck stop. I kind of like them. But anyways, this wasn't your ordinary stick that you walk out there and beat the sheep with and drive them around. This was probably your going to town staff. You're going to visit staff. This is my maybe even going to church staff. Walking stick. You know, some people got a walk stick for church, some people got a walking stick for everyday stuff, Pop did. And so he had his staff and his signet ring and his bracelet and his and that is in thine hand, and he gave it her, and he went in unto her. And he went into her one time, right here, and she conceived by Judah. Now, we know who's in charge of babies, but he went in one time and now she's pregnant. She's got a baby on the way, a husband that's not married to her right now but pledged to her, a father-in-law that just committed incest and adultery with her, her also with adultery and incest back. And here we go with this terrible weave. We weave and we weave these things. It says, and as soon as he went into her, she conceived by him. And she rose and went away and laid by her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood. And she, in other words, she went right back to her daddy's house. She put back on her mourning clothes. She took all that stuff that made her look like a harlot off, and she acted just like normal for about 3 months. Or 4 months, to give or take, depending on how big she got. So she's back there at her daddy's house, minding her own business. Everything's okay. And then Judah sends the kid. Now he sends the kid back to the place where she was at. He's trying to be honorable. He's trying to do the right thing. He says, and Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite. He was being honorable, but he didn't want to be seen doing it. He says, I know I told the old girl I was going to give her a lamb. I need to get my signet ring back. I need to get my bracelet back. I need to get my staff back. People begin to notice I ain't wearing these things. But I don't want to just walk right up there to where I was and knock on the door and say, hey, here's the sheep I owe you. Could I have my stuff back? So instead of him getting embarrassed and looking kind of funny in front of all the big shots, he sends his friend Hiram, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand. But he found her not. She had done, went on back to the house. In fact, she never was from that town to begin with. She wasn't even from anywhere around there. And then he asked the men of the place. He says, saying, where is the harlot? And they're sitting here, huh? We ain't got no harlot around here. We ain't never had no harlot around here. So I don't know what they were doing on the day that she sat out there, but undoubtedly they weren't paying a whole lot of attention. They were out chopping corn or plowing or whatever you do. And he says, what harlot? That was openly by the way, you know, that harlot, the one that's right there where the crossroads go, right there where the post is, where all the signs are, she was right there. And they all look at each other and say, you seen a harlot out there lately? No, I ain't seen no harlot. We ain't got no harlots here. So Hiram says, boy, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? He says, there was no harlot in this place. These men were adamant about the fact, we don't have harlots here. At least not here on this corner. Not out here in the open where everybody could see them anyways. And he returned to Judah. And he said, I can't find her. I tried my best. I talked to everybody in town. I tried to keep it confidential. I tried to keep it under the covers. But the more I had to talk, the more people knew. And finally I says, maybe I just need to go back to the house. Because it would be better for me to just let this lie than to keep stirring everybody up about this harlot that they don't believe is out there. The one they said, we ain't got a harlot. So he says, he went back and says, I cannot find her. And also the men of the place said that there was no harlot in this place. They've done got to the place where they're getting adamant. There ain't no harlots here. What are you talking about, man? You must be confused. You must be at the wrong place. I don't know who sent you here, but you need to go back where you came from. Then he says, and it came to pass about 3 months after. So we know we've done went about 3 months now. We're She's beginning to swell a little bit. She's beginning to get a little bigger, and she's beginning to be noticeable around folks. And I don't care how big your clothes are, your gowns are, whatever. People can just tell when you're pregnant. They can just tell that something's going on. It says, it came to pass about 3 months after, and it was told Judah. Here we go with that. Somebody told somebody again. You can't do nothing in secret. It was told Judah, saying, Tamar. Now he's probably hoping nobody ever mentions her again. He's hoping that she stays over at her daddy's house. He's hoping that she'll forget about needing to get married to Sheila. He's hoping everything's going to be all right. But all of a sudden, someone says, let me tell you about what Tamar's done. Oh boy. Tamar, thy daughter-in-law. Now make sure you understand who she is, your daughter-in-law. not just Tamar down the road or around the corner, but this is Tamar, your daughter-in-law. She has played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judas said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. Now, I'm sure there were laws back then where that's possible. I don't know if he had the actual power to do that or if he had to take her to the magistrate or whatever to have it done. But the thing is, it's amazing. He just committed fornication. He just committed incest. He just committed adultery 3 months ago. And the very first thing out of his mouth when he hears about Tamar committing adultery is, let's bring her to up here and burn her. When he should have been saying, I'm the one that needs to be burnt. I just did the very same thing just 3 months ago. I'm sure I hadn't went and repented or nothing like that. I tried to take the sheep, mind you. I tried to pay the bill. I tried to be upright. But she's done the same thing I did. And I want her burnt. I want her killed. I want her messed up right now. Well, that's called flying off at the handle when you really think about it. We hate when somebody else does something, and we just hide it when we do something. Says, and it came to pass about 3 months that it was told her that Tamar, their daughter-in-law, had played the harlot, and also that she was with child. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. Right off the bat, he says, we'll just take her out of it. In fact, if we get her burnt and killed and she's played the harlot, poor old Sheila, he's set free. He can go get married to whoever he wants. My pledge to her is okay. She's done messed this thing up where I don't owe her nothing. She's pregnant. She's done played the harlot. I don't have to get her married to Sheila. Man, this is working out good. And then I can get her burnt on top of that. That's going to work out good. Sheila's going to live a long, happy, prosperous life. That's his mindset. Then when she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, in other words, she sent ahead of time or sent the stuff. She says, sent to her father-in-law saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child. So he's sitting here all steaming and boiling and ready to do something. And before she's even brought through the door, here comes somebody carrying a signet ring, somebody carrying a bracelet, somebody carrying a staff. And they bring him right up to where he's at, and the guy lays him down and he whispers in his ear, hey, whoever these belong to is what she said. That's who the father of this child is. I don't know who he is, Judah, but whoever owns these. And I'm sure that this guy had seen this stuff before. This wasn't the first time he had seen Judah's staff or his ring or his bracelet. He said, but she says, whoever owns these, that's the father. That's the one who is with the child with. She says, am I with child? And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet, the bracelet, and the staff. In other words, y'all look them over good. I'm on my way. I'm going to come up there where y'all can do what you want to do with me. I'm guilty. I did break the law. I did commit adultery. I did commit incest. I did do wrong. But I want you to discern before you kill me who these belong to. If there's any other guilty party in here or around here, I'm not going to just outright say my father-in-law and I did this, but I'm going to let you discern. Y'all look at these items and figure it out. Discern who they belong to, the signet and the bracelet and the staff. Here's where Judah done a good thing. And Judah acknowledged them. Kind of hard not to, because everybody around there knew that staff. I mean, they know what your car you drive. They know what your walker stick looks like. They know what your wheelchair looks like. I mean, everybody around there knew that signet ring. It's kind of hard to say, well, that's not mine. No, that's not mine. I lost mine. In fact, that looks like mine, but I lost mine about 3 months ago when I was up there in the mountains having a party. When I was off shearing my sheep, they came up missing. No, he acknowledged them. He said, she hath been more righteous than I. Now, don't get me wrong. Both of them had committed adultery. Both of them had committed incest. But the thing is, she probably would have not done hers had he done what he had promised to do and given Sheila to her. She waited like she was supposed to at her father's house. She waited patiently. But when Sheila was well grown, she realized he's not coming. There's not, undoubtedly, Judah's afraid that he's going to die or afraid something's going to happen. He just got me over here pacified. So I'm going to have to take matters into my own hand. I'm going to have to handle this myself. So it says here, she is more righteous than I, because that I gave her not to Sheila, my son. I should have did that. I should have kept my word. I should have done the right thing. And he knew her again no more. Now, some commentators think that he married her. That doesn't mean that he had more children with her, but that he married her after this. That's what some of them think. But right here it says he knew her again no more, so I'm guessing that she stayed at her father's house. He did not burn her, undoubtedly. He did not stone her or have her killed. But he knew her again no more, but her children are accounted in the lineage of Jesus. So we see here, he knew her no more. And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. So we got twins in there. Now, it doesn't say they're struggling like Esau and Jacob were struggling, but there's twins in there, and she's travailing, and she's about ready to have these babies. And it came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand. In other words, in all the squirming around trying to get organized up in there to come out, one's hand comes out. And the midwife says, took upon her hand, and he put a scarlet thread and said, this one came out first. So she's sitting there, surely this baby's fixed to be born. I'm going to mark it. I'm going to put a thread on it. I'm going to guarantee he's the first one out. He's the firstborn. He's the one that's going to be the first child. And his hand came out, and the midwife took and bound his hand with a scarlet thread, saying, thus came out first. And it came to pass that the child drew his hand back in. Drew his hand back in, and behold, his brother came out first. Now, they're sitting here. He's already got the entryway blocked off and everything else, but somehow, as he pulls his hand back in, the other one says, I'm out of here. And he took the first shot. And it came to pass that he drew his hand back in, and his brother came out, and she said, how hast thou broken forth? In other words, how in the world did you get out first when the other one was already ready? So that string tying didn't do her no good. She'd actually been better off to lift strings off and just pretend like the one that came out first came out. It says, and one came out first and broke forth, this breach be upon thee. Therefore the name was called Phares, because it was, he broke forth, he prevailed over his brother there, and he shot right out of there. And afterwards came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was Zara. And I had them wrote down somewhere, but I forgot them. But anyways, one son pops on out, and we have, when we go into Matthew and we read down the lineage, Perez and Zara are mentioned in the lineage all the way to the bloodline of Jesus Christ. These are the children that go into Egypt as part of the numbered ones that go in when they all go into Egypt together. So there's where we are, and we're not going to touch Joseph tonight. But if you look at the very next line, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt. So all this is taking place. That doesn't mean that Joseph was on the trail all the way through this here, 2 or 3 years. But what I'm saying is, while Joseph was going to Egypt, this little 3 or 4 or 5 year thing took place while he's in Egypt. So now we're back at Egypt. So we're leaving the ranch, and next week we'll be in Egypt. And we're going to find out how Pharaoh and Potiphar and the captain of the guard get along. Amen. All right. Brother Neil, pray for us, please.